Hey, it's Paul Stanley here on Podcast Rock City.
What's up, everybody? Hollywood here from Podcast Rock City, and with me today we have Mr. Jody Havnot.
Greetings, world.
And we had a special guest for you today. I'm going to call him Mysterious because I don't think a lot of people know a bunch about him, but he's a member of the KISS extended family, Mr. Zach Thorne. How are you today?
I'm great. It's actually Throne, but I go by Thorne.
Oh, Throne. There you go. See, I keep messing up. That's you know, okay. You got to start with a mess up. That's how it starts.
It's all. I've been called way worse. Don't worry about it.
That's awesome. All right. So for those who don't know, Zach is. For those who don't know who Zach is, that's kind of why we're here. But to keep you interested, especially the KISS Army, just to let you know, Zach was a very important 1/4 of the Bruce Kulick band that did the amazing set list on the last KISS cruise and on the upcoming KISS cruise. And we're going to talk about a bunch of that stuff. So welcome. We always start with some questions. So let's start with, who's your favorite KISS member?
Well, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a drummer. So Peter was my favorite member. I went as Peter for Halloween like twice in a row.
Oh, wow.
When I was a little kid. Yeah. And then when I started playing guitar, I guess every KISS member was my favorite at one point. Ace, I became an Ace guy, and then I started playing bass. I obviously gravitated towards Gene, and then when I started singing, I went, oh my God, I forgot Paul Stanley is one of the greatest singers, frontmen of all time, so I went with him. But I started as Peter and worked my way through.
Yeah, full circle.
Full circle, yeah, exactly.
That's pretty great. So what was your favorite KISS record?
Well, the album that got me into them was Destroyer. A kid at my school brought it to school for show and tell or something, and I just couldn't get over the cover. The cover was, you know, sort of getting into hard rock music, and a cover just blew me away. And he put on Detroit Rock City, and I was always looking for something that was really super heavy, and that was the heaviest, at that time, the heaviest thing I had ever heard in my life. It was blew me away.
That's awesome.
So Destroyer was like my gateway drug into KISS, and then Alive.
Right,
and then I got everything. I got everything they ever put their name on. Just obsessed.
That's awesome. So it's safe to say you're a pretty big KISS freak like us.
Yes, for sure.
That's awesome,
totally,
man.
Cut from the same cloth. Ed, yep. No, just as much, just as goofy, just as shameless.
I can't
say enough.
So have you, when was the first time you saw him live, and have you seen him live on the End of the Road tour yet?
I first saw them live in 1979 at Nassau Coliseum in New York with Judas Priest opening up.
Wow.
That was everything I had dreamed of since I got into KISS was to see them live. I didn't know that was going to be their last tour for a while as the four guys.
Yeah.
And then over the course of, the next 20 or 30 years, I saw them here and there, but that was the first. Like, I saw them twice on that tour, actually, in '79.
Really?
Once in New York and once in Los Angeles. And I haven't seen them on the End of the Road tour yet. I would love to go, though. I mean, if it ever comes, swings by anywhere near me.
Now, really, are you residing in Vegas currently?
Yeah, I've been living in Vegas now for the last 8 years.
Oh, okay. They were in Vegas. You missed them.
Oh, they were? All right, well, then I'll have to find them on the map and go get them. I must have been gigging or something, or because they totally escaped my radar. Do you know the KISS was here in Vegas already?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Oh, my girlfriend did. She didn't tell me. The one I brought on the cruise last year.
Oh, okay.
Might not be going
cool.
this year, lady.
So, like, being a big Kiss fan as a kid, how surreal was it to be on a Kiss cruise and playing, you know, with Bruce?
It was incredibly surreal, actually. That's the best word for it, because over the years, I've met everybody in Kiss except Peter, and just, you know, have these little random hit-and-run Kiss encounters. And I've known Bruce as a friend for probably a little over a decade. But yeah, it's always surreal when you're in that world that you used to sit back and observe, and they're full of your heroes, you know, and now you sort of have dinner with them or say hello or, you know, just as a casual observer. It's always a little surreal, but it's also at the same time extremely exciting, because you're playing all this music that you grew up that influenced you, and with fellow-minded people like you guys and me, and I mean Todd, me and Brent are all huge diehard Kiss fans, you know, to the ever annoying level to Bruce, because we're always bringing up super obscure songs, and he goes, "Why would we want to do that?" He goes, "The fans will go crazy." And he goes, "Because we're such diehards, you know."
Yeah.
So it's exciting and surreal at the same time, I guess.
Yeah,
that makes any sense.
Cool, man.
It's a blast.
So, who pushed Sword and Stone on to Bruce? Was that your idea, or Todd's, or what?
Because
that's like as rare, that's as deep as you could go, dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it really was. I had only heard it once in the 80s one, right? Because that was for was that for Revenge? Or was that for
Well, Kiss never even released it. It was like a song Paul wrote that some other band did on, I think, what was it, the Shocker soundtrack or something?
Yeah, Bonfire did it on Shocker.
Yeah.
Bonfire. And then also, didn't Paul Dean from Loverboy cover it?
Yep, he did.
Because I thought I yanked that out of my butt. Yeah, someone mentioned that.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as pulling a deep cut, I mean, damn.
It might have been Fitz, I think.
Oh, yeah?
I think Fitz. Yeah, because we would always be in rehearsal going, what would be a really cool, like, left turn that no one would expect to do? And then someone said Sword and Stone. I was like, right on. So,
totally.
Yeah, we were like, this is going to blow minds. And we're going to stick it in the middle of a medley so people will be like, no way. And yeah, people come. I'm like, I can't believe you guys did that.
Yeah, dude. I didn't even go on the boat. I was at home watching videos, like, tripping out on it. Could not believe it.
You weren't? Oh, no kidding. You weren't there?
No, I wasn't there. I don't mess around in the ocean.
He's worried about the Kraken.
Nothing bad can happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Me and the Kraken don't really see eye to eye.
Right, I got you.
But Joe, our normal, our fearless leader, who's seeing Kiss probably right about now in Atlanta. He's not here, but he was there sending back video to Sonny and I. So we were like, holy shit.
It was so fun, man.
It's mind-blowing.
Thanks. Thank you.
So Kiss Army can be tough. So they've treated you pretty well. I mean, after you guys were done with that first set, people will probably come up to you saying, dude, who the hell are you?
Yeah, pretty much. After the first set, and Fitz and Todd both told me, they go, dude, your whole life's going to be different tomorrow after we play our first show. And I was like, nah. And sure enough, man, my girlfriend and I woke up, we went to the buffet, and it was like, Zach, everyone was like, and the fans started dubbing me Revenge Gene. That was my new nickname.
Nice. Yeah, you killed that Unholy for sure, and Thou Shalt Not.
Oh, thanks. Oh, man, thank you very much. Yeah, Thou Shalt Not. Those songs are just so fun to sing, and I guess everyone wanted to hear them again, so I'm honored.
Awesome.
Let's do it.
A lot of people were talking about how the Bruce set was better than Kiss, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not going to come. I don't want to say anything about that. I mean, I had a blast, and it's more important for me that everyone that watched us were totally into it and dug it. And, you know, that to me is, you know, the complete reward right there.
Right.
And of course, we had Kiss above us. They were standing above us in their rooms watching us. So I'm like, this is all I need. Have Gene watch me do Gene, you know. But I guess I passed.
Yeah, totally.
So let's talk a little bit about the rest of your career, or the career that you've built. I'm a big TV guy, so I was a fan of your dad. I love Hogan's Heroes, Mannix. One of my favorite shows of all time was It Takes a Thief. Oh my God, I love that show. right? So
it's a great show. Yeah.
Obviously, that's where you kind of got the acting thing. Was he okay with you being a musician too, or was he just kind of pushing you into acting?
Well, it was actually kind of the opposite. I was a musician since I was a child, like probably four. I was playing violin in school, and then I kind of, you know, I discovered Kiss and those kind of bands, and I started playing drums, and then I went to guitar. So I was always obsessed with music. It was just, it's, you know, it found me kind of thing. And I knew I was going to be a musician. And then I moved to Los Angeles, where I was from originally. But I grew up in my teenagers in New York City. And when I graduated, I moved to LA to become a studio musician, like Steve Lukather. I thought that's a great way to make dough. You know, you don't have to travel, and you go to the studio and you come home and you got a big house and sounds, you know, sign me up. And there was one thing led to another, and I started, you know, acting in a theater group just for fun. And then an agent, it was one of those LA stories, like an agent saw me in a play, and then he goes, I'm going to make you a big star, kid. And I said, well, I'm not really an actor, I'm a musician, but if I'm getting paid, sure. So then that sort of became my main gig, and music became a sort of secondary gig, which was, it was the total opposite when I moved to California. It was the opposite, but now I was an actor who played music on the side. So a lot of people didn't think I was a musician, and I was like, no, I kind of got hoodwinked into this acting career, and I'm just riding it out for as long as I can. And then eventually I came to a place where I was like, I got to go back to my first love, which is music. And I kind of retired from acting and then devoted my life to music again.
Now,
that makes any sense?
Yeah, no, makes total sense. This person that helped you get the acting gigs, he connected you with Aaron Spelling somehow? Like, how did the Heights thing come about?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was my agent got me an audition for the pilot for this show. Being a musician and as being an actor who has a musical background, you're totally ready for these kind of specialty roles, you know, like a lot of times, like basketball players become actors, and then an audition comes up and it's like, well, we need a basketball player who's this high and this age, and all the agents send in their guys who are athletes, you know. And when a thing came up in the breakdown stuff for a musician, I always got sent in because I could play,
right?
You know, a lot of times they don't care if you can play, but this came down the pike as like, well, we want to get these actors who can really play. And my agent was like, that's you. So I went in and I read for Aaron Spelling, and it was a really, really long audition process. It's similar to American Idol. They start with all these people and then they whittle it down to two. You know, it's crushing. It's like me and this other kid were at every audition, and then I booked it.
Wow.
And then I, you know, we flew up to Canada and started shooting the series, and next thing you know, we were a band. It was bizarre.
Was there always an intent to release a soundtrack from the show? Because that wasn't super popular in the 80s and 90s.
That's a really good point, actually. Yeah, it wasn't super popular at all. I think that they wanted to have a spinoff of a soundtrack to sell, you know, and hopefully they thought that we could eventually tour. It was similar. There was a movie out at the time called The Commitments.
Yeah.
Remember that movie?
Oh, yeah, Mustang Sally, and, yeah, man. Awesome. Yeah.
Mustang Sally.
Yeah.
There you go. And they actually put that band together based on their musical talents, and as well as like if they could act. And I think they wanted to do, like Aaron Spelling wanted to do a version of that and put us on the road and you know, do that. But the show didn't last long enough. We only lasted one season. We were done by the end of the year, but we did have like records that came out and sold. And so we had to go out on the road, but we never made it past the shopping mall kind of crowd. We would go out in shopping malls and sing.
Yeah. But you had like a number one hit though, right?
Yeah. We had a number one song. It was called How Do You Talk to an Angel?
And love that song. I love that song.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. It was fun because we cut it in like, I don't know, real fast, and then lip synced to it in the pilot, and they were using it in all these commercials for the coming up season. And next thing you know, it was on the charts. I mean, the producer would walk on the set as we were shooting and say, you know, the song's number 40 on the charts.
Wow.
I go, what song? He goes, Talk to an Angel. I go, that's really? Like, it's a real single? And then it was 20 and 10 and then 4 and then 1.
Wow.
And then we were like, wait a minute. So we're like number one. He goes, yeah, you guys are number one. Now you got to go out every weekend and go, you know, sing in shopping malls. And it was just like Backstreet Boys shit. We would go out and like sing for thousands and thousands of kids with cop and, you know, like police barricades and things like that. And you're just pinching yourself going, this is really happening?
Wow.
Wow.
So it was fun. And then by the end of the year, it was over. But interesting side note, during that year, we recorded the soundtrack album at a studio up in Vancouver, Canada called Little Mountain Studios, which back then was a very famous studio where Slippery When Wet by Bon Jovi was recorded. Dr. Feelgood by Motley Crue. It was kind of the studio where all these Canadian producers cut their teeth. Bob Rock, Bruce Fairburn, a bunch of other guys that all cut their teeth at Little Mountain. And we were in B, which was the smaller room. And in A was Aerosmith doing Get a Grip.
Oh, wow.
So we would roll in to Little Mountain to go do our tracks. And there'd be Joe Perry and Brad Whitford just sitting there having, you know, frozen yogurt.
Yeah.
And I worshipped Aerosmith as a kid. For me, it was all about Aerosmith and Kiss. My whole, like, you know, first 12 years of life I was obsessed with those two bands. So the fact that they looked at me like I was, because they knew me from the show. Steven Tyler came up to me and goes, hey, you were on television last night. And I just almost, you know, creamed. I couldn't believe he recognized me. And then we would start to say hello to each other when we would walk around Vancouver and stuff. So they were in there, and there was a guy that was also in Little Mountain Recording named Todd Kearns.
Oh, yeah. So is that how you guys met?
That's how I met him. I met him. I met him back then in 92, and then he remembers me vividly. I don't remember meeting him, but he remembers me because we were on TV and whatnot. So, but yeah, he goes, yeah, you walked in Little Mountain. We started talking, and that's where we first met. And I was like, damn, that's pretty rad.
Yeah.
So that's, we kind of go all the way back then to 92.
Cool. Yeah.
I mean, he's the one that got me to actually move to Vegas. Cause I was actually living in Vancouver, giving acting another shot, sort of figuring out where I'm going to wind up. And then I had come down to LA because I had a band down in Los Angeles with a guy named Eric Dover and a couple other people. And they said, yeah, we got this guy who's from Canada. He took your place when you moved up to Canada. And I go, oh, who is he? And he goes, ah, some tall guy named Todd. And, you know, he sings and he plays guitar. So I went down, I walked in, and there he was. we started talking. And I said, I live in Vancouver. He goes, I'm from Vancouver. And I go, well, that's weird. And we hit it off, and then we exchanged numbers. And then I sort of said, I want to come down to Vegas, I think, and move there. What do you think? And he said, dude, it's home. I'll get you a gig. Be in my band. And that's how I came here.
That's awesome.
So now you've done a bunch of voiceover stuff too. Is that kind of acting ends and you start voiceover stuff, or are you still doing voiceover stuff?
I still do voiceover stuff occasionally. I was, I got into it up in Vancouver because there a lot of post-production work is done up there in Canada. It's cheaper. And so they do a lot of sort of looping and stuff like that. And also when I was doing The Heights, I found out that I was pretty good at looping. Which is where you go in after the show's filmed and then you have to replace some dialogue here and there.
Right.
Yeah.
And you have to make it sound like you're not replacing dialogue. Like you have to make it sound like it's actually on the day. And
yeah.
I just had a knack for it. And so people would say, do you want to do some voiceovers? I said, yeah. And, I had done some in LA right before I left LA, for Nickelodeon. I was working on a show called Avatar. And I did an episode or two of SpongeBob, and I did Batman and a couple other things. And I was like, this is a great career. It's like being in the studio.
Yeah.
It's cool. Oh yeah. And I also had a career in Los Angeles for a while as a singing voiceover guy. I
was Greg Brady, huh? Greg Brady.
Yeah, I was Greg Brady.
Wow. We love those two movies.
Yeah, those movies are great.
Oh, you do? Oh, right on. Thanks. I love them too. I think they're great.
Yeah, they're kind of really twisted, like a twisted slant on the Brady Bunch. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you did the whole like beanstalks never grew and all that stuff.
I didn't do that. I think the actor did that. I did the theme, and I did the songs where all the kids.
Oh, okay, okay.
That was. So like if it was, I think keep on dancing all through, and I did Time to Change.
Yeah,
that's a great one.
Yeah. I walked in and I said, I'd do a mean Greg Brady. And they go, do it. And I go, autumn turns to winter and then winter turns to spring. And they were like, you're it. That's you. You got the gig.
Totally.
And that was it.
That's spot on, dude.
Wow.
It was fun. It's super fun to do.
Now, saw some video of you doing Raiding the Rock Vault. I'm finally going to get to see it at the end of April. You still doing it?
Cool. I do from time to time. Todd and I are, we sort of sub for each other.
Okay.
When he's not available, I'll go in and do it. And then when I'm not available, he'll come in and do it. But I do it from time to time. I love doing it. I have such a great time doing it.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Vegas April 21st or the 25th, so I'm hoping to catch it then, because those are the exact, that's a Sunday through Wednesday, so they're playing all those days.
Okay, cool. If I'm not in it, I'll come down and hang. I mean, I love hanging out with those guys, so why not? I'll definitely come hang with you.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Now, how did you and Todd get hooked up on that? Is that a audition type of thing, too?
I auditioned for it when it was at the Tropicana. I think Andrew Freeman was doing some road work at the time and they needed a sub. And I got a phone call from somebody, either Howard Leese or somebody in the show. I can't remember. And they asked me to come down. They were holding auditions and I sang Separate Ways and they said, you want the gig? And I went, sure.
Right on.
Wow.
And yeah, that was kind of how I started with them. It was fun. It was really fun. It's still fun.
Now, the other thing that you have similar to Todd, you're in like 30 different bands. So, like Sin City Sinners, Two Plasmatics. I don't quite understand the Plasmatics thing. You're doing your own thing. I saw some stuff. You're doing shows at Vamped and stuff like that. So, like, is there, and you're going to be at Woodstock 50, right?
I am, yeah. I know. I'm busy. Busy. I came here to join the Sin City Sinners because Todd was fronting that band at the time and their bass player, Michael Ellis, had left. And they said, we need a bass player. I want you to get the gig because you'll nail it. And I went, I'd be honored. So we did it. I was there with them for about 2 years. Todd was starting to go on the road Slash a lot at the time and they needed someone who could sing the stuff that he was singing and cover whatever, you know, position in the band. And I went, well, sure, I'll do it. And after a couple of years, I left and then I started doing other things. I was, Spasmatics is actually the band, not Plasmatics, but I would have loved to have been in the Plasmatics. I loved the Plasmatics when I was a kid. The Spasmatics asked me to join them, their residency group here. It's basically an 80s tribute to 80s new wave Revenge of the Nerds. We dress up as Revenge of the Nerds costumes and it's a big comedy show. It's the same, very similar to Metal Shop or Steel Panther, except with new wave 80s stuff. And that's been a huge ticket here. And they offered me the frontman position and I went, I'd love to. So I do that here. And then Rockwall called and I do that. And then my friend Pearl Adey, who is an incredible singer from LA who I've known for 20 years. She started a solo project and asked me if I wanted to play with her. And I've been playing with her on and off in her albums started coming out. So she formed a band and I play guitar in it, sometimes bass. And she's now like, killing it. She's going out to promote her records. Her records are amazing. And that's the band I'm playing with at Woodstock on the 50th day. So I play with her a lot. And then, I got my own solo stuff too. That, whenever I have time, I have a bunch of songs that I was ready to record and I wanted to I'm making a solo record. I'm recording it in LA. So I have to find time to go to LA to record it, which is not easy, but I somehow managed to make time happen. So so solo albums is on the brink.
Cool.
Yeah. Cause that's awesome. Yeah. Cause you wrote a couple of songs on the Heights thing. You got a couple of songs on the Sin City Sinners albums. But there's not a lot of other recorded stuff out there, right? Oh, not, and then you, the Kiss Night in Vegas, which we want to talk about a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Most of my recorded stuff up until now was probably soundtrack material just because I was an actor trying to do music back then. So it's really hard to have a musical career when you're a full-time actor. But I was the studio guys that would recognize that I could actually play and sing and do all that stuff. So I wound up doing a lot of television soundtrack work, film soundtrack work, playing on other people's records. But I've co-written, I don't know, probably about a dozen songs that are out there somewhere on people's records. Not a lot of hot profile stuff yet.
Yeah.
My album's going to change all that.
Totally.
Now, I'm not a musician, but Jody's a major gearhead, so go for it.
Oh, right on.
Well, we were kind of looking at photos and videos. It seems like you're half the time it's a Les Paul, other times it's a Strat. So do you have a preference, or is it just whatever you need for the whatever particular gig?
I love a Les Paul.
Hell
I
yeah.
mean, who doesn't?
Exactly.
So, you know, I picked up a Les Paul because Ace Frehley, like everybody did.
Yeah, totally.
You know, that's why. It's just the coolest looking instrument, and he sounded great, and you got the toggle switch. But lately, I've been using my white Strat more and more, and it seems to fit my hands better. And I get different kinds of tones out of it because I play in so many different kinds of bands that
right.
Les Paul is a phenomenal guitar for rock, but not a lot else.
Yeah.
So it's tough to get multiple sounds out of a Les Paul. Yeah. You get a Les Paul sound.
Exactly. So on the Fender, is it just three singles, or you got like a hot rail or a humbucker at all in it?
Yeah. Nice eye. I got two hot rails, one in the bridge and one in the neck, and then the middle is just a single coil.
So you can get anything you want out of that. Hell yeah.
Pretty much. There's a show I play in here called MJ Live. It's a Michael Jackson impersonator live show.
Oh, yeah?
And I have to do everything from, you know, Jackson 5 stuff to ballads to Beat It. And I need a guitar that can carry all those sounds. So the Strat is just perfect for, you know, it's like a Swiss Army knife for tones. It just gets anything I want.
Yeah, it's awesome. So Jackson 5 songs, huh? Which Jackson 5 songs are you guys doing?
Well, at that show, there's a medley that's in there, which is like, I'm a big Jackson 5 fan. Like, that's the reason why I started playing an instrument, because they were kids that played, and I didn't realize how good they played until I saw them live on television at, like, the Normo Dome, and they were actually playing all those Motown songs live. There was nobody under the stage, and I was like, geez, these kids play better than my guitar teachers.
Yeah. And then so you got little Mike's vocal on top of it.
It's like, yeah, you got Michael out in front. I'm like, this is the ultimate band of all. Like, they play as good as the Beatles played. And they're teenagers.
Yeah. That's great.
So I was like, okay, I can get an amp and I can get a guitar. I can actually, you know, be a kid and pick up an instrument. So, but this show, we just do like a medley of just their big hits. You know, I'll Be There, ABC, I Want You Back. Nothing too deep.
No, Who's Loving You? That's my all-time favorite.
Nah, I know. That's one of my favorites, too. I Am Love, all those cool tunes. Yeah. We don't. It's a 57-minute show, so we got to cover like Michael's whole career, so we just bash through it.
You do that Dirty Diana. I always like that one.
We do Dirty Diana, yeah.
Yeah, it's dope. I like when Michael had guitars, you know? It's cool.
Yeah, it's some of the stuff's really heavy to do, and you know, it's fun. The drummer, Mike DiNino, we call Beans, he's a mega Kiss fan. So him and I are always sound checking Kiss songs that you know, when we sound check on the day. So
that's cool.
Thought I'd throw a shout out to Mike.
So as far as your Kiss thing, I know we're kind of jumping all over the place, but you know, you grew up in the makeup era. Did you follow them through the 80s without the makeup and all that?
I didn't. I did not follow them. I just was into other stuff in the 80s. We moved to New York City. My folks did in 82. And back then, there were like, you know, thrash metal was starting to happen and punk rock. I was discovering punk rock, which I didn't. You know, beforehand, I grew up in the Valley in Los Angeles. So I didn't really hear any of it. So now I'm let loose on the streets in New York, and there was all this music coming at me. So I was I've always been kind of a music whore. I just want to always find new stuff.
Yeah, I hear you. That's how I am.
And you know what I mean? And I'm just, so you get it. So I'm always fascinated by sounds I've never heard before. It just, you know, that year was like hip hop was being played on the streets in my high school. You'd go to high school and there's kids spinning on boxes and plugging, you know, turntables into lamps.
It was like Beat Street at your high school, huh?
It was totally that, because it was only invented a couple of years prior in New York. So right. I was sort of at the epicenter of that. So it was an exciting time for music. But I obviously always was aware of what Kiss was doing, always. Yeah. Like, they never left my radar. I knew what album was coming out. I knew who was on it. I knew who produced it.
Gotcha.
I knew the singles, you know, because I had MTV and I was an MTV junkie, like every kid I knew in school was.
Totally.
So every video that ever came out, I knew the singles, and occasionally a kid would play me the record. I go, that's freaking great. I should get, you know what? The funny thing is, the year I moved to New York, Creatures of the Night came out, and I had written off Kiss. I just thought, because every year they put out an album, and I went, it's not as good as I wanted it to be. And I always gave them another shot, And then I started getting seduced by these other bands. And I went, let me go over here. But when Creatures came out, I saw the I Love It Loud video, and it blew my mind. I couldn't believe how heavy they sounded. And me and my best friend were like, Kiss is back! So I went to the record store, and I got Creatures, and I ate that album up. I went, Creatures, Lick It Up. I devoured both those records. I think those are two of their best albums, especially, you know, their heaviest albums, certainly.
Yeah.
And then my friend got into Animalize, and he sort of got me into the non-makeup, like Animalize and Asylum. So I found it through him. But I never gave him up. I never, you know, lost touch. I always had to know what was going on with Kiss. Always.
That's cool. I was just curious because I was just wondering, you know, like some of these songs that you guys were doing in the Bruce set were super deep 80s cuts. And I was just kind of curious if those were some of the first times you'd ever heard them, or, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. They were, actually. I didn't want to say anything in rehearsal. I was sort of playing dumb.
Yeah.
Because Fitz would go, all right, we're going to do King of the Mountain into No, into, and I'd be like, yeah, that'd be great. And meanwhile, I'm like, I don't know either one of those songs. But I soon, you know, went and heard them, and I went, oh, these, you know, like, what did I miss? I kind of regret not getting the records back in the day. Yeah. I knew Revenge, actually, because Revenge was, you know, Bob Ezrin, and they're back together again. I'm like, I'm in. I didn't know. I became a new fan. It was cool.
That is cool.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Were there songs you guys tried out to try to put in the set list, and it's like, oh, that's not working? Do you remember any of those?
Yeah. There were a couple, not too many, actually. Usually the songs that we tried out that didn't work were, we just ran through them maybe once.
Yeah.
And everyone just said, maybe not now. Maybe we'll...
Yeah.
Say that for another. I know there was more Carnival Soul stuff. We were gonna. Oh, there is one. I'm actually gonna bring it up in rehearsal when we start rehearsing. I love this song, and I didn't know it because I didn't have Carnival Souls. But I Walk Alone.
Yeah,
the one that Bruce sang. Right?
Didn't have That's Bruce sing
the one that Bruce sang. We were doing it in rehearsal. And I thought it sounded great. Todd and I were doing the background vocals, and I just got this feeling about it. I thought, this feels cool, man. I can't wait to play this. And then sort of at the last minute, I forgot why, but we sort of had too many songs, so we had to start cutting a couple, and that was one that got cut. And I'm kind of, you know, you guys might have to help back me up on this, because I'm going to bring it up again in rehearsal. I think we should do it again, because it's so obscure, and I think it's a great song.
Yeah,
fans, and I like Bruce's
kind of mark out
it.
Seeing Bruce sing too, you know, that'd be pretty cool.
I think the fans would love it. I really, really, really do. I was kind of sorry to see that one go, but I'm gonna bring it back.
There you go.
Me single-handedly, I'm gonna bring it back.
Right on, Zach. You gotta bring back that Bang Bang You. I'm just kidding.
I think that was another one we talked about too. I don't know if we ran through it, but yeah, that's another one too. Bang Bang You.
People would bug out.
Romantic.
Yeah.
You know, Gene's bass playing so underrated. Like, was there a bass lick you guys, you were trying and you're like, what the hell is he doing? I can't figure this thing out.
Dude, the song, shit, hold on. because there's two songs that have a similar bass line, but they're both different. And Bruce actually sat me down because I thought I had a handle on it. And it turns out that it was way more specific than I thought it was. I want to say it's King of the Mountain, but it might be. We did a Crazy Nights medley too, and there was a right. song in the middle that yeah. has a similar Hell to Hold You.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? It's kind of a similar tempo, and the bass lines are kind of similar. Totally. One of those two, I can't remember right now, but it has a totally sculpted bass line. And I was not doing it right at rehearsal. I was just, you know, screwing the pooch, as they say. And Bruce stopped, and he said, no, it's different. You should listen to it. And I actually sat down, and I just focused on his bass line. And I went, man, that's... I mean, I've always been a huge fan of Gene's bass playing, and I used to defend him to all the music snobs at every school I went to, going, you guys don't get it.
Right.
Like, he's like Paul McCartney on steroids.
Yeah.
He's walking all over the place, man.
And
he's
able to
really
sing on top of it, you know? That's hard part.
That's really tricky. There's one song I couldn't do, you know, we wanted to do the studio versions only, which we did. We stuck really to studio versions. We didn't go live, except for endings, maybe, but we didn't, like,
right.
do their live versions. Bruce wanted to do strictly, you know, and so that sort of, there was one song I couldn't sing and play live, studio-wise, and that was Unholy.
Gene was having a tough time of that, too, in the day.
Gene simplified the bass line. He, you know, there's parts in the bass line on the studio version where he stops playing to create this cool tension.
Yeah.
But you can't do that and sing that god darn song. It just does not work. And I was trying to do it in rehearsal, and Bruce is looking at me like, I just picked up the bass yesterday. He's like, are you all right? And I went, I'm trying to do the studio version. And then Bruce goes, Gene never did the studio version. Come here. And he put on a live 3, and I heard it, and I went, oh. He just simplified it. And I went, oh, okay. And that was a way in. I'm happy about that.
So let's talk Kiss Night in Vegas. I know there's the two volumes, and you did Making Love on Volume 2. You did Let Me Know with Todd on Volume 1 and did this awesome version of I Stole Your Love, which Jody and I both love that song.
Hell yeah.
Oh, man, thanks.
How did that stuff come about? And Kiss Night in Vegas is like a charity thing, right?
It is. It's put together by Las Vegas musicians who are all Kiss fans, which most of us here are, and all the proceeds go to funding public schools to give children instruments.
Yeah,
to keep the music. Yeah, it's such a. I mean, we're all about that because everyone here is a musician, and of course it's Kiss.
Yeah,
so, you know, why the hell is
bonus? But yeah, I mean, making sure that music continues forward into the future, because a lot of schools don't teach music anymore. And I was a music teacher for about 15 years, so I totally get it, dude. And I think it's really cool.
Exactly. If your kid can't afford an instrument, it kind of stops there. So everybody
and then all music will only be made on a fucking laptop, and it's just gonna the whole world will suck.
Yeah, I know.
You gotta have real instruments.
These kids today.
kids are getting lucky. Yeah, my son plays bass and just got a partial music scholarship down in L.A. to go to college. So they were lucky, though. They had music in high school, right? So,
right.
Yeah, of course. How did you guys get into Kiss? I'm going to flip it on you. How did you guys – what was your first encounter?
I'll go first. I'll have Jody go second. For me, it was MTV 1984, seeing Paul jump through the hoop of fire.
Right.
And there's girls all over the place, and I'm like, I think I want to do that for the rest of my life. Of course, right. I had none of the talent or the game or anything else or the girls hanging around, but that's kind of what got me into Kiss.
Right.
Great.
Yeah. For me, 79 or so, the first thing I'd ever seen was like Kiss on 3-2-1 Contact as a little kid, you know? And it totally blew my mind. And they're showing the whole, like, PA rig and everything, which was, I don't know, it's kind of interesting to me as a kid, and it's kind of, my whole life has kind of went that direction. But what really happened, though, is like I was always aware of Kiss all through my youth, but I didn't really become a super duper fan and start buying records until Lick It Up. once they took the makeup off and they were all over MTV, I was just at the right age. And so I was like, I remember Kiss, you know? And, so I went back and started getting all the records, and Animalize was like the first one I got when it was new, you know. I was still pretty young, but my parents were cool about, like, if I wanted anything musical, I could have it, you know, which was cool. So I've been into them since I was about four, even though I didn't really start listening to the records until a little bit later, you know.
That's cool. What's your, what are you guys, I'm going to just, I guess I need to know, because now we're all nerding out. What's either one of your favorite Kiss albums?
For me, it's Asylum, and my favorite Kiss song is Mr. Speed.
Yeah?
Yeah!
My favorite album has always been Dressed to Kill, because it's the first one I ever got, like, that I ever had, you know, the full album. So
yeah, I go through a period where I think Dressed to Kill is their best record.
It has one of the greatest productions, you know, that no one ever talks about, Bogart's production, but I mean, I'm a punk rock guy, and I love Bubblegum, too.
So am I.
Yeah. So
I love bub punk. Yeah, I like stripped down shit too, and the songs are so tight.
Yeah, so tight. Short,
like
concise,
2 minutes of just
perfect.
Short bursts of choruses, and yeah, and yeah. I like. It's funny. I have my friend Scott, and I'd always debate every now and then what's our favorite Kiss record. It just changes, you know, with the weather. But we went through a big Just to Kill phase separately. I was like, I think Just to Kill is their best record. He goes, so weird. We were driving around like for the last week. Dude, I heard that.
Holy shit, dude. If I get blown away, it was nice to meet you, man.
It's great talking to you, dude.
Yeah.
Remember Jody before he got blown away?
Yeah, the fucking tree crushed him in this fucking storm. Yeah. We got huge trees around here, man. Like couple hundred year old, like huge motherfucking trees. Anyways,
that's right.
I'll be fun.
I love trees. We have sand here.
Yeah.
Lots of sand.
Yeah.
So, Zach, sometimes we do these Sweet 16s. It's kind of like a basketball bracket, right, of Kiss songs. Mm-hmm. Kind of take them down to kind of like a champion. So we're hoping you want to do one with us.
Of course.
All right.
Podcast Rock City Sweet 16.
All right, Sweet 16. Yes! Sweet 16!
What are we waiting for?
Let's stop this pussy footing around.
Oh, yeah!
Right?
Sweet 16! All right, listen!
So these are songs that are not in the set list right now that we wish maybe one last time Kiss puts them in the set list. I picked a bunch of songs, threw them in the randomizer, and basically we're just going to kind of take votes on it. So,
round one.
The first battle is I versus Larger Than Life. Like, which one would you want in the Kiss set?
Okay. Which one I would want would be Larger Than Life, because that's one of my favorite Kiss songs. But I think I would work better, because it's more of a group song.
Yeah,
Larger
total
Than
anthem.
Life to me, total anthem. Larger Than Life is to me, like, more of, for me, it's all about Bob Hewitt.
Totally.
Yeah.
On that song.
All right, so you're voting I
vote I. Yeah, I think I would work better. I mean,
Jody?
I have to go Larger Than Life, just because it's a better song. But you're right, though. I mean, when they did I on the Boat, people were crying. Joe had tears rolling down his cheeks. You know what I mean?
I think people would cry for Larger Than Life. I would prefer Larger Than Life, but, you know.
I think I saw Gene do Larger Than Life at one of his solo gigs I was at. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I think he did, yeah. Fitz is to blame for that, because he's, you know, one of us, and he's in the band. And he's like, we're doing Larger Than Life. And Gene would go, wait a minute, do you think though? And he's like, we're doing it. And Fitz insisted on, like, She's So You're, like, songs that.
So Fitz is responsible for all the great ones that they were pulling out. That's
he
cool.
Is. He's the one that throws in the left turns, and Gene trusts him that the crowd's going to go crazy. They, you know, he call and go, dude, we're doing She's So European. I'll send you a video. And
that's like, so cool.
You got Gene to do that, you know?
Yeah. It's badass.
All right, next battle, Reason to Live versus Watching You.
If For me, it's not even close. You got to go Watching You. Even though I do love Reason to Live, but come on now.
I mean, okay, this is tough because I'm like my golden stuff was the makeup era.
Right.
So, of course, I'm always going to gravitate towards the makeup era Kiss. But having been like enlightened to Bruce's whole era of Kiss, I dig Reason to Live. I was really surprised at how good a song that was. Having said that, I'll go with Watching You.
That's good.
I totally sold out my beliefs.
That's okay.
Well,
all right, Watching You on that one. All right, next one's a little bit tougher. Creatures of the Night versus Strutter.
Creatures of the Night. I love Strutter, but I've heard it way too many times.
Yeah.
For me, it's still Strutter. So, Sonny, you're going to have to break this tie.
I got to go with Creatures. It's not even close.
Yes.
All right, next one's going to be tough, especially for Jody.
Okay.
Rock Bottom versus Unholy.
It's not tough for me, dude. Not even close to being tough. I go Rock Bottom. I mean, I would almost pick any makeup song over anything without makeup. Almost. Just
that's
as
my
a
problem.
Default.
I do the
you know
same
what I mean?
Thing, but then there's no contest because we're just going, just put makeup songs, you know?
Right.
That's for me, anyway. I don't know. At this stage, I think I'd go Unholy. Gene's vocal on that is insanely good.
Yeah.
True.
So evil.
Yeah. I'd rather have Unholy, too, because I think Rock Bottom, it's just too short, and I think Unholy would get the crowd going.
Unholy would get them pumped, man.
Well, I'm not thinking about it in the terms of what does everyone else think. I'm saying this is my favorite of the two.
Oh, I got you. I got you. All right, the other
you know
side.
What? Jody will just be happy just putting on Kiss Alive.
I would. I mean, you know, you really can't beat that one.
All right, Forever versus Firehouse.
I got to go. It's so weird because now being in Bruce's band, I'm kind of digging all the new Kiss. So I go Forever. It worked huge when we did it on the boat.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going there.
This matchup, I'm going Forever as well, dude.
Oh, that's
buddy. Come to the winning team.
Sweet.
I mean, just for the solo alone, you know, I mean, that's one of Bruce's greatest solos. And and Firehouse to me has always been one of the weakest tracks Kiss ever had. I never understood why they always pushed that one, other than Gene doing the fire, you know?
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Yeah, I think Forever's a much better tune.
Yeah.
And how about Parasite versus Ladies' Room?
Parasite.
Parasite all day long.
Parasite's like one of the greatest riffs of all time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How about Come On and Love Me versus Fits Like a Glove? I want him so bad to do Fits Like a Glove one more time. That'd be so great.
Wow.
He did it with
Fits. I love
Fits
Like a Glove.
I do too.
Yeah, did do it with Fits.
Yeah.
Like a Glove. I got to go. It's fun. You know, wow. I'd go with Fits Like a Glove, man.
Yeah.
That would blow people's minds.
It would.
Again, it's a Gene's vocal. Gene's vocal on that is so great, and you know as a vocalist, he's so underrated.
Totally.
You guys think that?
I think everything about Kiss, they were like totally underrated because of the fucking makeup. No one took it serious. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean Gene is one of my all-time favorite singers and bass players, and had he been in like. Yeah, I don't know, the Doobie Brothers or some band that had like all this respectability with no gimmicks, I think people, or the Eagles or something. I think people would have taken him much more seriously as a musician because he's so good. But his vocal range and ability to sing super low and evil or super high.
Yeah, he can get way up there.
Yeah. He
can get way up there. He's got a real cool Lennon-esque kind of shred growl to him. And he just sounds, and when he turns on the evil, man, Fits Like a Glove is one of his best vocals, hands down.
Yeah.
It's just painfully good.
I think what happens is it's a double dip thing. It's part the whole makeup thing. And then it's part, Paul is doing such crazy things in the 70s and 80s that it makes what Gene's doing look easy. But if Paul wasn't there, what Gene would be doing would be impossible to do.
Right.
That's very true. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. All right, so he voted Fitz. Jody?
Man, I love both of those songs, especially Fits Like a Glove, because I think it has the best Vinnie Vincent guitar solo that he's ever recorded on anything, you know, on anything that he's ever done. But I have to default to Come On and Love Me, dude. I mean, I just have to. It's one of the best songs ever.
You're so predictable.
I know, I know, but I can't help it. Glove.
I'm going with Fitz.
Okay. All right.
All right. The last of the Sweet 16 before we get to the Elite Eight is Strange Ways versus Mr. Speed.
Ooh.
Strange Ways. And I love Mr. Speed, but again, Strange Ways is so dark and heavy. But, I have a caveat, though.
Okay.
Strange Ways, mm-hmm. if Peter sang it.
Yeah.
So Peter's going to come out of the darkness and sing one song.
Out of the darkness, and they're going to sing one song and then just leave. Because that song has never sounded the same with anyone else singing it. I mean, Eric actually has a great voice, so maybe Eric's singing it, but it can't be, it has to be that kind of growly voice, because just his voice on that song is the perfect marriage. It still puts goosebumps on me, his vocal. No one can sing like him either. That's the other thing. No one can sing like Peter Criss.
It's true.
He's got, especially when you put Peter Criss on a heavy track, dude, forget it.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, after 40 years, maybe we'll still get this rock solo album from Peter Criss. But we'll see what happens.
I hope so. I hope somebody gets him in the studio and makes him like a fucking heavy rock record, because he really has just a crazy scream and a great voice. And
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Anyway, that's my vote.
Jody.
Strange Ways or Mr. Speed? Dude, I'd probably have to say Mr. Speed.
Oh, interesting.
I got to go with my favorite song. Sorry, Zach.
I get it.
They're both really great. I think I've just, the whole strange, I used to do a show called Strange Ways. Maybe I'm just burnt out on the whole concept.
Round two.
All right, Elite Eight, first battles, Larger Than Life versus Watching You.
Ooh. Larger Than Life, because I think there's not a real live version of that yet.
Right. Let me ask you this, you know, since you're a musician who plays everything, do you think that's Peter Criss on the drums on that damn song?
Definitely.
Do you? Okay.
For a couple reasons. Gene said it, Gene said it a lot, and he would definitely out, I feel.
Yeah, you're probably
Peter
right.
Peter wasn't on those tracks. He would say, oh, no, that's Anton Figger, that's whoever. So,
drugs and alcohol made him have to get a ghost drummer.
Yeah, right? So if he's already does that naturally, I believe that he would be, because Eddie Trunk has asked him that a couple times, and he said, that's Peter. There's no reason why he would defend Peter for just no reason on it, unless it really was Peter. One, and two, there are certain things that Peter does in his drumming, especially in the 70s, that are really signature to him, especially the hi-hat work, because I learned how to play drums playing the Kiss album, so I mean, I kind of studied his playing, and there's certain things that he plays the hi-hat a certain way that none of the other Kiss drummers did.
Yeah.
So, and I hear it in all that side four sets. And the coolest thing about, I don't know what they did, I don't know if they just fed him the right drugs or whatever, but, or they mic'd it a certain way, but Peter never played like that again. But I think it's mostly miking, to be honest.
It's like he's trying to get that Bonham sound, you know?
Yeah. And it's, you know, if you really, really, really listen to it and think to yourself, it was mic'd cavernous, like a cavernous mic. And
a lot of room mics. Yeah.
A lot of room miking, a lot of space and stuff like that. And you listen to his drumming, like the solo he does at the end of Rocket Ride. If it was Anton, it would have been a lot of different kinds of advanced drum techniques. It's really just Peter playing super fast, which he was really great at on the snare drum. So if you listen to it in those eyes, you'll hear it. It is Peter. I have no doubt in my mind.
Right on.
Ace, on the other hand, that used to break my heart, because when I was little, I thought that was Ace.
I did too, until I found out, you know.
Yeah. That Larger Than Life solo was easily my favorite, like top three favorite Ace solos of all time. And then I found out it was Bob. Right. And I went, damn.
Totally. Same thing for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are the choices here, Sonny?
Larger Than Life, Watching You.
I think I'd have to stick to Watching You, man.
Oh, man, I didn't talk you into it? Damn.
I love them both, dude, but I do love them both. But I like that groove of watching you, like that 70s groove. It's tight.
Yeah, it's good.
I think it influenced all those 90s bands.
All right, next battle is two heavy songs, Creatures of the Night versus Unholy.
That's tough. Well, I'm on Team Gene these days, so I'll have to go with Unholy.
I'd pick Unholy out of that matchup.
I like singing that.
Unholy's going to be a sweep. Okay, the other side of it is going to be a sweep, too. Forever versus Parasite.
You can write mine in already, Sonny.
Yeah, I'm about to write Parasite in already.
Sure. Parasite, one last time? Yeah, I'd like to hear Parasite.
Yeah, it's just such a great riff.
And before we get to the final four, Fits Like a Glove versus Mr. Speed.
Ooh.
Oh, shoot. I guess... Yeah, I say Fits Like a Glove.
I had to go Mr. Speed. Sorry, dude.
I have to go Mr. Speed, too.
Well, that's your favorite tune.
Yeah,
I don't blame
you.
That's
going to be easy, yeah.
I'm
all right,
into the 80s era now, so I'm just like really into those songs now.
That's cool.
Round three.
All right, so we got final four, three classics plus a 90s song. First battle is Larger Than Life versus Unholy.
Hmm.
Ooh, those are two killer Gene vocals. Damn.
Bob or Bruce?
Unholy. I'll go Unholy.
I had to go Larger Than Life, dude. I don't think Zach and I have had a single one in common.
Yeah, right?
Weird.
Yeah. I think I got to go Larger Than Life, too. I actually like that song better.
Fair.
Yeah. The other side, my poor Mr. Speed. Parasite versus Mr. Speed.
Parasite.
Yeah. Sorry, Sonny.
That's okay.
Final round.
So the championship is Larger Than Life versus Parasite. Those are two great songs.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm going to go with Larger Than Life because that one is obscure and there's no live version of it. So I would love to hear that live.
Yeah. What are you going to do, Sonny?
I love Parasite, but I love Parasite, but you know the definitive version's already on Kiss Alive. Like, there's
That's
no
true.
Live version of Larger Than Life.
That is true. I think you might have
sold me. I'm going to make you decide because I'm going to go Parasite because that riff is just too cool.
It is too cool, but I think Zach has a good point, man. We get a great killer version of Larger Than Life by Kiss, because I've seen Gene do it, but I've never seen Kiss do it.
All right, Larger Than Life wins.
Boom.
Damn.
I influenced him.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No,
nope,
not
that.
At all. Right on,
all
right,
Zach. So now that
That's
I've...
Killer.
So it's Zach Throne, it's the Spasmatics, it's Revenge Gene... Now that I've got this right, where can people find you to follow you and find out all the crazy things you're doing?
Well, right now on Facebook, I have my own webpage, right? It's just Zach Throne. So you can follow me on, is it ZachThrone.com?
No, it's just Zach Throne.
Oh, it's just Zach Throne. So you can follow me there. There's constant postings, and you can follow me on Facebook. I'm working on creating a web page right now, but I don't have one yet. Mostly Facebook and Instagram. You'll find me on Instagram at Zach Throne.
Okay. All right, Jody, anything to add?
Well, I was kind of curious. I mean, so you're slated to be on the boat this year, right?
We are.
With Bruce?
I'm very excited.
Same band, so... Yeah. Exact same band, or is there going to be different songs in the set list? Or are you gonna? What are you guys gonna do?
He
ain't gonna tell
to
us.
It was worth a shot, dude. It was worth a shot.
I ain't telling you, dude. I'm not giving that away already.
That's why you kept voting Larger Than Life.
Gotcha.
Right. See, hint, hint. we haven't put together the set list yet. Bruce is doing Grand Funk Railroad. You know, he's in Grand Funk Railroad. He's right. doing a lot of road work with them. And Todd and Brent are in Los Angeles working with Slash right now. And I'm going on the road. I play with Corey Taylor right now in a cover band. We have this great, great, great cover band. Corey Taylor is the singer in Slipknot and right. Stone Sour. And we're playing in Dubuque, Iowa, and Green Bay, Wisconsin, the 13th and the 14th, and then same two cities the following weekend. So I'm doing that. So all of us are kind of out of town and really busy, but we've been talking about songs to put in the set list. I think we're going to do a lot of the same stuff we did last year because a lot of people didn't get a chance to see it. They only saw those two shows.
Right.
And the one show we did in Florida, and that was it. So I think we're going to bring back a lot of those songs and investigate a lot of newer suggestions. I mean, when you have three Kiss fans, you know, in Bruce's band, it's just like what you and I, what the three of us just did. We just throw songs out. What about Large? What about this? What about that? And we volley them to Bruce and see what he says.
That's cool.
So it's just a blast to come up. I mean, Todd came up with it. I can't even talk about it right now. I want to. But Todd called me the other day and he goes, I have an idea. He goes, if we do some road dates before the boat, we should do. And it's basically one album from front to back, but I can't say which record because I want to surprise everybody.
It's Asylum.
And I, of course, I went, yeah, let's do that. So, but that's if we have some shows. We're talking about doing some shows before the cruise.
That's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, it'll kind of blow your minds. It's blowing my mind because I'm a fan. So
this is awesome.
Yeah, you'll just have to wait and see.
Cool. Right on. Well, Zach, thank you so much for joining us today. Just want to thank you for your time. It's been an awesome time.
Oh man, my pleasure. It was great. I had a blast. Anytime, man. Just give me a shout. It was fun. One quick nerd story I have to share because
go for it.
We're okay, I forgot to talk about it. When I was like 16 or something and I was trying to, you know, form my first bands in New York City, we were pretty terrible. You know, we're just learning how to play. There was a rehearsal space in Manhattan at the time called Rocket Studios, and we were there in one room, and it was 84. And I'm playing with my band, and we're like butchering some Van Halen song, typically. And the door of our rehearsal space opened, and Paul Stanley stuck his head in.
Oh, wow.
And this, you know, I'm a kid. I'm in high school. I'd never met any of the guys at Kiss yet. He looked around our room, and he looked at us and smiled and closed the door, and I just dropped my pick. And I went, okay, rehearsal's over. We're going outside to see what's going on outside. And we went outside, and Kiss was in the studio right next door.
Wow.
Rehearsing.
Damn.
And it was the day they were auditioning replacements for Vinnie Vincent.
Oh, holy shit.
Wow.
Yeah. And Eric Carr came up, was walking down the hall, and I stopped him, and I said, because I saw Gene, I saw Paul, and I saw Eric, and I didn't see Vinnie. And I, you know, me and my friends were freaking out that they're right here. And I said to Eric, I said, where's Vinnie? And he kind of looked over his shoulder, looked back at me, and goes, he's around. So, and then they said, yeah, we're auditioning, you know, new guitar players and stuff like that. And I was there the day they were auditioning new guitar players. And my band was like, you should go in and audition. I go, I can't even play. No way.
Wow. Wow. That's a great story.
Yeah, that's incredible.
All right, Jody, sure. Any last words?
I'd say thanks for joining us, Zach. And thanks to everyone who listened, man. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, thank you guys. I mean, I had a blast. Hope to do it again.
All right.
See everybody. All right. Kiss Cruise.
Well, you know what I'm going to say? You know, we are podcast fans. We listen to Kiss Podcasts and a bunch of others, and you're going to hear some of the commercials for the ones we like right after this. Cool. In 3, 2, 1, peace.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I've given you all the time I can spare at the moment, my dear. You'll have to come back. Thank you, and goodbye.
You wanted the best, you got the best. And if you want the hottest show on Monco Radio, join us in the Kiss Room. The Kiss Room is a monthly radio broadcast celebrating the hottest band in the world.
Kiss!
It's your place for all things Kiss and some... For broadcast dates and all information, go to thekissroom.com. The Kiss Room broadcasts live and worldwide on Monco Radio, where music and minds meet.
Hey, this is Stephen Michael.
And Sonny Hollywood Pooney, and we are from the Growing Up Rock Podcast.
Come check out the Growing Up Rock Podcast, where each and every week we talk to rock stars past and present and come up with some fun themes all to the beat of some killer hard rock and metal music.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you can also check out our episodes, concert reviews, and album reviews at growinguprock.com.
That's growinguprock.com. GROWINUPROCK.com.
Growing Up Rock.
Turn it up.
Hey everybody, this is Jody Havnot. I want to invite you to come hang out with me and Mr. Nate Dimmel in the Dummy Room. The Dummy Room is a podcast that's all about having fun, talking about some great music, and we also have some really cool guests too. Check us out, man. I think you really dig it.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Bill Algie.
And I'm Dennis Talbot.
And I'm Alan Tate. And we're the Ages of Rock Podcast.
Hey, we want to thank our friends at Podcast Rock City for the shout-out. Our show has great guests and a variety of topics. We've been told our interviews feel like guys sitting in a bar, so kick back and check us out at agesofrock.com.
Woohoo!
Ladies and gentlemen, do you like metal, punk rock, hardcore, and cracking jokes about being a fan? Yes? Then check out Music the Lifeblood, the podcast that goes deep into the core of being a fan with new music from badass bands, band and genre discussions, along with in-depth interviews from some of punk, metal, and hardcore's titans. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, Tumblr, and Facebook. Something old, something new, what are you listening to?
Music, the lifeblood.
Baby, you know it's only you and me. And as far as I'm concerned, that's all I need. A generation behind. We're going nowhere and that's just fine.
No gratitude need be voiced. Your mind speaks to us.
Go shake a wee-wee.